Save big on your next project at Menards. Check out our huge selection of Richmond water heaters. Whether it's electric or gas, tank or tankless, Menards has what you need in stock. Ensure that you have hot water for when you need it most with a new Richmond water heater from Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Memory, like liberty, is a fragile thing. Elizabeth Loftus. Welcome to Grimley.
I'm hurt.
Are you comfortable?
I'm fine.
Okay.
There's just like no way.
We need fucking chairs. We need comfy, cozy chairs at some point.
Sit. Do you want to try anything?
I will scooch.
Okay. Because I feel like you could get more comfortable than. Oh
my God. Is it too shallow, the couch?
I don't know.
I think the couch is kind of shallow, but you could move it.
It's a bit of a shallow. No. Don't move it. We're fine.
Okay.
Everything's good.
Listen, I don't need.
I regret we're turning the recording on.
You should, because I regret it too.
What do you do? Because you can just cut it. Who cares?
No, I usually do. That's totally fair. I do usually cut.
As you should.
We talked about our teeth and stuff being in them. I can kill myself. I can't. Allow me to go jump off a bridge abruptly and quickly. Anyways.
Okay.
You're not helping.
Welcome.
You're not helping.
I was worried about this. This is why I wanted to record earlier.
Oh, we'll be fine. It's fine.
Okay. Welcome to Grimley. I'm Meg.
Hi. Welcome to Grimley. I'm Missy. And we are two unserious people to talk about seriously creepy shit.
Oh, yeah. The unserious part, we nailed it today.
We really are nailing on the unseriousness.
What are we going to talk about today, though? Let's just...
No.
Oh, no. Can we just...
I keep forgetting to do this. I have a comment that I need to read. Oh. A good comment from our Spotify. It's about...
You do?
Yes, it's from the Betty Broderick case.
Okay.
I think it was part two.
All right.
We talked specifically about getting served papers.
Oh, somebody... Followed up?
Yes. A lawyer followed up.
Okay.
Which I'm surprised a lawyer listened.
I am judging.
No. We're probably their trash TV. That's what I imagine.
Oh, listen.
We're the lawyer's trash television, like the Bravo.
Yeah.
Yeah. They need just a
listen,
an unplug.
God bless them. You know?
So this is from Karen W. So she says, lawyer here. Exclamation point.
Karen W.
Karen
for real.
W.
Yeah, there's really a Karen W.
There's a really a Karen. I'm not making this up.
Okay. Yeah. I'm listening.
So serving papers. Process servers track people down wherever they can find them. Still, they'll try the house, but if they can't find them, they'll go to their work, etc. And
Jesus.
Then, at least in my state, you file an affidavit of service with the court attesting to the fact that you served it and how. Here, sheriffs and lawyers can do it, but there's also companies that you can hire, but the person has to be approved by the court to do it.
Okay.
And that was their comment.
Okay.
Do you have more questions?
I have so many questions.
Ask them to Karen. Is she still listening? I hope so.
I think we probably were talking about this because somebody was served and like all the ways that can happen. And is it intentional? Can you influence how someone will serve papers to your ex?
That was the question.
And I'm not sure that that answered it for me. Can you read it again? I'm so sorry.
I'm not going to read it again. Do you want to read it?
Yeah.
You can read it. Just read it to yourself.
Okay. Wherever they can find them. Okay. So they'll try the house, but if they can't find them. So they just don't care. Okay, so I guess my question to Karen is, can you intentionally hire a dickbag process server that you know is going to do it like and doesn't care? Do you influence it?
That's a good question, actually.
I mean that respectfully, too.
Dick bag process.
Honestly, I probably would be a dick bag processor.
It depends. Well, you would be. Okay, so I'm...
Well, I think it depends on the crime.
Well, this wasn't a crime. This is a...
Similar... No, I mean, Betty Broderick was like, she was getting served divorce papers.
Divorce papers.
Yes. That's a great question. Oh,
you could be served for anything.
You could be served for a lot of things. Mm. If you're a dick bag, I'm going to be a dick bag about serving you. You know? Tit for tat.
Okay, so then did he hire
someone to be a dick bag about it?
That's the question.
Because, to antagonize Betty. Yes. Because he was trying to get everything on the divorce.
And on that front, because we also talked about Olivia Wilde and Jason Sudeikis. And yes. Did Jason Sudeikis intentionally have someone show up at her job?
Yeah.
So I guess that's my question for Karen is it just the luck of the draw with whoever's serving? Some people are like cool. Some people would wait until...
I think if you have enough money, you can probably pay someone to do it the way you want it to.
Yeah, and so is it common for people to influence the way that happens?
I think probably if you have enough money to influence it.
I'd love to know.
Yeah. So Karen, thank you for leaving the comment. She's like
a real person and with a...
Yeah, people listen to us, man.
Listen,
I know you can't think about it because it makes you cringe a little bit. Yeah, you have a hardcore cringe. About it, but people do listen, and she was like, "That's what she said," and I was like,
"Well, if she listens, I'm very proud of us."
Thank you, Karen. And
like, you deserve all of the credits. So, okay,
yeah. Wow. I kept forgetting to rate that. God, I need to tell
you
this.
What a delight!
I know. Thank you, Karen.
She looked cute too.
The comment, yeah, you look adorable. We love you. Anyways,
I imagine all of our listeners are really cute.
Yeah, you're the cutest, continuous little babies. We love you so much. With your smooth skin.
And WAP.
What? We had dinner and drinks before this, so I'm apologizing in advance. Maybe you're right.
Yeah.
Maybe we shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Well, here we are.
Yeah. But I do have a true crime episode for us today. Oh,
okay.
There's some tragedy to it, but I picked an episode I felt like needed a conclusion because I can feel it in the ether because we've been doing a lot of unsolved cases lately. I'm like, we need something with a finality.
Okay, sure. So, yeah.
So I guess I just made my own sugu.
She's gonna let us finish this one, y'all.
Yes, that's what she said.
Yeah.
We're also perverts.
Extremely.
Yeah, perverted.
Okay.
So, trigger warning, this episode's pretty dark for us in general. So, if you are not a fan of crimes against children, which, why would you be?
Right. No fans here.
Yeah, no fans of that.
It's particularly sensitive.
Yeah, this is a sensitive topic for that issue specifically. So, just be aware. In the early morning hours of June 7th, 1998, 6-year-old Brooke Sutton woke up to a nightmare inside her grandmother's home. Jody Johnson was murdered. Brooke was nearly killed. And investigators were left with one fragile description from a traumatized child. She said the man looked like her uncle Clarence.
Oh, I've heard this story.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Yes.
So that uncertainty should have mattered. Instead, it became the case against Clarence Elkins. Yeah. So you have heard the story.
Yes.
This is awful. This is awful. This is one of the forensic files I think of. We've done the forensic files kind of centered episode in a while. I think the one we did was the Anthony Pignataro episode.
Yeah.
Where he was trying to poison his wife and he basically just grew her tolerance so she could like... Do you remember that?
Yes.
With the fucking sap-in wig, sap-in toupee.
Yes!
I was like, does it go into the skull? Yeah, they put screws in the skull to sap in the toupee.
Crazy.
Yes. That was the last Forensic Files episode we did, and that was like a year and a half ago.
That was a while ago.
Yeah. So you have heard this case, so you know the...
Yes, but just because I've heard the case does not mean I'm not... right along with the audience. No idea how this
ends. It's fine if you know it. I'm not trying to dupe you.
Yeah, but do I remember all the details? No. But no. It may come to me.
Okay.
Usually it doesn't.
Generally, it does not.
No.
Okay, so overnight on June 6th and into the early morning hours of June 7th, 1998, 50-year-old Judy Johnson was inside her home in Barberton, Ohio. And this is a picture of Judy. It's not the best picture. I couldn't find a better picture of Judy.
You are just saying that because you know I'm going to just say.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for warning me and everyone else. Oh, you know what? It's not a good picture. It's not a good angle, but like
it's a,
she's got the haircut. She's got these fun glasses.
She's a grandma.
I'm seeing collarbone.
It's a grandma.
It's a grandma. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a grandma. So also inside the home that night is Judy's 6-year-old granddaughter, Brooke Sutton. And this is a baby picture, a little picture of Brooke.
Okay.
Yeah. So Brooke was asleep in one of the bedrooms when she heard a commotion happening in the front of the house near the kitchen.
Oh my God, how terrifying.
So Brooke gets up and goes to check what's happening, and she comes out of the bedroom to see a man beating her grandmother.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah. And this man looks ish like her. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So Brooke runs back into the bedroom and hides under the covers and tries to play that she's asleep.
Yep.
In a hope that the man doesn't realize that she had kind of popped out for a second.
I'm not sure I would have done anything differently than that.
As a 6-year-old?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's pretty logical.
Yes.
Yeah. But the man comes into the room, hits Brooke over the head, and knocks her out.
Oh
he
my
also
God.
Sexually assaults her and chokes her and seemingly leaves her for dead.
Oh, fucking kill him.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. So... yeah, Brooke runs into the bedroom, hides under the covers, and then a couple hours later, Brooke comes to, and she gets up and goes into the kitchen, and she finds her grandma Judy dead in the kitchen.
Oh my God. And she's just, it's just the two of them there.
It's just the two of them there.
Oh my God.
So Brooke then calls for help and leaves a message saying that someone killed her grandma. And some sources say that she called a friend, and some sources say that she called a neighbor.
Okay.
So it's kind of a little bit like back and forth. It could be both. But she calls someone and basically leaves a voicemail. It's really, really fucking sad.
You heard it?
Yeah.
That poor baby. That poor child.
I know. She's like, I hate to be the one to tell you this, but my grandma died. That's what she says.
She isn't even like asking for help. She's just like, someone needs to
know. She's like, I need someone to go get my mom.
She's already handling business.
Yeah. She's like, I need someone to go get my mom is what she says.
Oh my God.
It's really fucking
sad.
Six. 6-year-old.
I'm speechless. Kill who the fuck?
Oh, we'll get into it.
Okay. I'll get in it. All right.
Yeah.
Ugh, it's so upsetting.
So Brooke also had some pretty horrific wounds, including a missing part of her left ear.
No way.
Yeah.
Missy, I'm so upset. Sorry. I'm feeling homicidal. What the fuck?
And she runs to another neighbor's house and knocks on their door, and she tells them that she needs help.
This little girl was brutalized. This baby.
So Brooke goes to the neighbor's house, knocks on the door, and it's Tanya Brasdale to answer the door.
Okay.
And she tells her that she needs help. So the neighbor tells Brooke to wait outside.
Oh, I see.
Because her kids needed to finish getting ready for the day.
Oh, because it's early in the morning?
Yes. It's around like 8 a.m.
She's just trying not to stress her kids out with this.
We'll get into it.
Oh, my God.
So Brooke ends up waiting on the porch for about 45 minutes.
Really?
Yes. And during that time, Tawny doesn't call an ambulance or police.
Did she even hear her out?
This little girl comes to the door. She's covered in blood. There's blood all over her.
Oh, my God.
She's missing part of her ear. She's also been punched in the face.
Ugh.
I didn't get to the wounds because I really want to dramatize that.
Okay, because I'm just like, I'm trying to give Tanya's ass a break. But I'm like, how do you think she didn't know? Okay.
No, she knew. Yeah. So little Brooke. Brutalized,
yes.
Yeah, bloody, been punched in the face. She's sitting on the porch for 45 minutes. Garbage bell.
Fuck her.
Hell yeah. Before Tanya takes Brooke home to her mother, April Sutton, and her mother is basically like, what the fuck happened? And Brooke is like, I think Uncle Clarence hurt me and Grandma. And Tanya is like, yeah, she said it was her Uncle Clarence.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Brooke comes back with Tanya. Tanya's like, she's saying it's her Uncle Clarence that hurt her and her grandma.
Okay.
And so April's like, holy shit, my mom might be dead. And I also have my daughter here who is bloody and battered.
Right.
And so she picks Brooke up, takes her to the hospital, and she also sent her husband to Judy's home to go see what's going on with Judy. And that's when he finds her dead.
Okay.
So all this is happening. And the fact that Brooke was sitting on Tanya's patio or porch for 45 minutes kind of gets lost at this moment because everyone's focusing on bigger factors, right? At this point.
Right.
Yeah. So April takes Brooke to the hospital. April is Brooke's mom.
And so the uncle is not April's husband?
No. She says Uncle Clarence.
So it's a different uncle.
It would be her father.
Oh, you're right. Stepdad. Or her dad.
Her dad. It would be her dad. Do you know how genetics work?
I was honestly so fucking confused.
I could see it in your face. I wasn't sure why.
I was like, there's so many names, man.
Do I need to explain? I don't know what's family trees in general.
Okay. I get it. Okay, are you here with me? Parents come.
Yeah.
Pick her up.
Do you want me to reiterate what I just said?
No.
I will. No, I'm going to do it. So, Brooke, she wakes up. She has horrible things happen to her. She sees her grandma dead in the ground in the kitchen, living room area of the home. She calls a friend slash neighbor, leaves a really horrific voicemail saying, I'm so sorry, my grandma's dead. I need someone to get my mom. She then leaves the home. She goes to Tanya Brasseil, and then Tanya makes Brooke sit on the porch and wait while she's getting her girls ready.
Yeah, I guess for the what day. I missed is like how Brooke's mom got involved.
Well, because then Tanya, she takes Brooke, instead of calling the police or the ambulance or anything, she takes Brooke and drives her home.
Home to where April. She lives.
Yeah, April Sutton.
Not to grandma's house. She drives her home. She said, okay, wait, then I'll put you in the car and then I'll take you to your mom.
Yeah, instead of calling the police.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, she's like, and then her mom is, whoa.
Yeah, her mom's like, what the fuck is happening here?
I missed that part about her getting, okay.
Yeah, so her mom, April's, what the fuck is happening?
That's a lot.
Yeah, and so then Tanya is dropping Brooke off. She's like, she said it was her Uncle Clarence.
Oh my God.
And.
But we don't know who Uncle Clarence is yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then April's like, what the fuck is going on? So she sends her husband, Brooke's father, to go check on her mother, Judy.
And he finds Judy.
He finds Judy dead.
All right. And
at the same time, April's taking Brooke to the hospital.
Okay.
Yeah. So at the hospital, detectives ask 6-year-old Brooke for a description of the man who hurt her and her grandma. Mm-hmm. And Brooke says the man looked like her Uncle Clarence.
Yeah.
Looked like, yeah, I think is the kind of crucial word here.
Right. But yeah.
Yeah. So then later, police ask Tanya Brasseil, they're like, hey, what did she say to you? And Tanya says that she said it was her Uncle Clarence that hurt her and her grandma.
Okay.
So there's a differentiate.
Sure.
There.
A discrepancy.
Discrepancy. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know what I said.
Well, I knew what you meant. And I knew if later you'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, no, I'm like, you're a fucking idiot.
discrepancy.
And that wording is really important.
Yeah.
Because Brooke does not say with absolute certainty right away that Uncle Clarence did this.
Yeah.
It's Tanya that kind of is shipping that in general.
Right. And like when terrible things happen, usually it is someone you know. A domestic disturbance makes a lot more sense than a total rando. Mm-hmm. I understand in the, and it sounds, listen, Tanya had her hands full, I guess. It's just not shocking to me that she would have immediately gone there.
Yeah, totally.
You know, but so, evidence matters.
Yeah.
More than just like the word of two people.
Totally. Yeah.
This is one of them being a child.
One of them being a 6-year-old. Exactly. Who just had been like traumatized.
Completely.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, Brooke is like, the man looked like my Uncle Clarence.
Right.
But then people eventually take that, and detectives, they take that as like she had meant that as a positive identification.
Right. No. Yeah. It's easy, like, oh, we're looking for this girl's uncle.
Yeah. They're like, it, like a done. Look and like it is two different things, but like people are just taking that and they're running with it, detectives included.
Of the area.
Okay. Yeah.
And it does seem like an honest mistake, but it matters.
Yeah. So Clarence Elkins is married to one of Judy's daughters. The other daughter, her name is Melinda. And this is a picture. It's not a great picture, but this is a picture of
I hate that you have to preface. Oh, it's just like not a great picture. You know, they like a fun, groovy couple.
Yeah, she's got like the perfect 90s hair.
Yeah, and he does too, actually.
Yeah, totally.
And this does he have a fuck-ass mustache? Yes, he does. So let me show you the
actor. Though. Honestly, don't
get it.
I was waiting
Who
for that.
Who are they? Is this the bad guy?
No, I was like, God. As soon as I put that picture in there, I'm like, God damn it, Meg. That's what I thought, honestly.
Because you agree.
Yeah.
She sees the vision.
And Melinda's also beautiful. She's got the big, like, Julia Roberts Pretty Woman hair.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what that's what I think of when I see her hair. So Clarence is basically squeaky clean in terms of violent crimes and really any crimes ever. He's just, like, not a man that's this person.
Doing this?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, like, yeah. Most men aren't doing this.
No.
It's fucking insane.
So Clarence and Melinda live about 40 miles away from Judy's home, and they're about 45 minutes to an hour drive.
Okay.
And this is,
imagine the timeline matters.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Clarence would later say that on that night of June 6th into the morning of June 7th, he had been out to several bars with some friends. And about 2:45 to 3 in the morning, he was home in bed. And Melinda corroborates this along with other witnesses that he was with. There's 8 witnesses who were like, he was with us. Ugh. And then Melinda's like, he came home. He was also with me.
Yeah.
She says she was up because one of their kids was sick.
Okay.
So everyone's like, there's no way.
Right.
If you're saying the timeline is the timeline of when Judy was murdered and then Brooke was brutalized, this doesn't add up.
Right.
Everyone's testifying that Clarence has an alibi, essentially. But Clarence is arrested later that day.
Oh, okay.
And he and Melinda are, like, dumbfounded. Not only by the attack and the murder of Judy and Brooke, because this is also how they found out.
Oh, my God. And
So, like, 12 cops show up to their home.
Okay.
This is when Melinda's told, hey, your mother's been murdered and raped and brutalized. And also your niece has been raped and attacked and was left for dead. And then they're also like, and we think it's your husband that did it. So we're taking him in. All of this within 10 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm just, like, thinking about all of these victims in this story are all women until right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Melinda...
Now Clarence is...
Yeah. Clarence is also a victim. So Melinda instantly comes to Clarence's defense, emphasizing that, yeah, this is my husband. I know women defend their husbands, you know, probably to a fault at some point. She's like, but this is also my mother that was fucking brutalized and murdered.
Right.
Whoever that is, I want justice. She's like, I'm telling you, it's not fucking Clarence.
And my, yeah. And my baby niece?
And my niece.
6-year-old
yeah.
niece.
Yeah. My 6-year-old niece. She's like, this is my family that was also brutalized.
Okay.
So I'm telling, like, you, it's not my fucking husband.
Yes. Not a, she's down.
Yeah. So regardless of the protests from Clarence and Melinda, Clarence is believed to be the main and only suspect in this case.
Yeah.
And police believe they even have a motive.
Okay.
So a woman claiming to be good friends with Judy says that she was with Judy when she got a phone call from, when Judy got a phone call from Clarence threatening to kill her because Judy was meddling in Melinda and Clarence's marriage.
Oh, okay.
So basically, like, Melinda and Clarence were going to fight. Melinda would go stay with her mom, Judy. And she is saying, like, basically that is the motive. Because Clarence was, like, pissed that Judy would be like, you should leave him.
This was the neighbor?
This was a
friend. The grandmother's neighbor?
Friend of Judy. Not a neighbor. A friend.
A friend.
Different person. Different person. I think her name is Patricia.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have Brooke's eyewitness account and the supposed phone call. But police tried to get some physical evidence to build a case against Clarence.
Okay.
But they can't find anything.
Okay.
So they search Clarence's car the morning after and his home and Melinda's home. And they even go as far as looking at the drains of the home.
Mm-hmm.
And they come up with nothing.
Okay.
So they have no fingerprints, no blood, no physical evidence. And there's nothing from his home or car that connects him to Judy's murder or Brooke's assault.
Okay.
This is also important because there were hairs found in Judy's body.
Oh.
And DNA testing confirms that those hairs did not come from Clarence.
Oh, well, then now we have a real problem. Okay, so what do? They let him go?
No.
They don't. Yeah, I didn't think we'd be talking about this.
No, so even with the lack of physical evidence, Clarence is still charged with the assault of Brooke and the murder of Judy, and the whole case is built on Brooke and Tanya's eyewitness accounts.
Oh, 100% of the case?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And this is a still from a video of him getting booked.
Oh.
Just, what do you fucking do?
I know.
You're like, I didn't do it. Oh, it's making me, it's reminding me of the thing about Pam.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Wait, the thing about Pam?
That case, the whole case.
The what?
Have you never listened to that podcast, The Thing About Pam?
I don't think so.
Okay, we will not. I'll tell you about later. We cannot diverge.
I thought you were talking about the, oh, it's something wrong with Aunt Diane. Isn't that the?
Oh,
I got my aunties confused.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't say aunt. I said the thing about Pam.
Pam sounds like an aunt.
Pam is an aunt.
She's an auntie.
Yeah.
Okay. She's mom's sister. That's all I know about Pam.
Okay. So Clarence is charged with aggravated murder, which carried the possibility of the death penalty. And he is also charged with attempted aggravated murder,
God,
along with 3 counts of rape and felonious assault.
Okay. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Like overnight. It's just crazy. Overnight.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's even a point in the trial where Brooke, who is now 7 years old, points to Clarence when asked who hurt her and who killed her grandmother.
She did?
Yeah, during the trial.
And during also, the trial, she did?
Yeah, so there, yeah,
they made her come. Sorry, first of all, we're now at trial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're now at trial. Yeah. So he gets charged, he gets booked, and they're throwing the book at him. They're charging him with everything. And
they make the 6-year-old, who's probably now 7,
yeah,
come on the stand,
mm-hmm, and point him out. Because they have nothing else. They have Brooke's eyewitness account, and then they have Tanya,
okay,
who says that Brooke told me it was her uncle Clarence,
yeah,
that did this.
Okay.
That's all they have.
Right now, that's just the narrative. That's what everyone's, yeah, talking about. Okay.
So Jesus, Melinda, that's
so mean.
I know. So Melinda says later that she knew Clarence was fucked after this. When Brooke was like, he's the one that did it. Like this little 7-year-old girl.
Yeah.
She's like, shit. You're fucked. You're cooked.
And it also is like such a weird place for the family members to be.
Yeah. So at this point, Melinda, basically, she loses her house.
Yeah.
Because Clarence is now arrested, so they're not getting that income to pay for their mortgage. I think she was also working, but maybe part-time.
Got it, yeah.
So there's nothing money-wise for her. Also, her entire family basically disowns and cuts her off because she's on Clarence's side and everyone's on Brooke's side, including her sister.
Her mom is also dead.
Her mom's also dead.
Jesus
Christ. It's like, yeah, she's in the trenches by herself. Yeah, with her kids, that's it. That's what she has.
Oh, my God. Maybe Clarence's family, hopefully.
Hopefully, but it doesn't really seem like they were around.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So on June 4th, 1999, Clarence Elkins was convicted of all these crimes. So he's acquitted of the aggravated murder, but convicted of the lesser charge of first-degree murder. I don't know what the difference is.
Mm.
I'm not a lawyer.
It's like the amount of violence?
Maybe.
I have no idea.
Me either. But so basically, the death penalty is pulled off the table. Because of that.
Okay.
He's also convicted of the attempted aggravated murder and 3 counts of rape and the felonious assault.
Felonious.
Felonious. Thank you. I knew I was saying it wrong.
You're going to be mad at me.
I knew I was saying it wrong. Please correct me if I'm saying it wrong.
Sorry.
Don't apologize.
It's just like when you're the one reading the scripture, just moving through it. Yeah. You don't, you did, but you know.
It's funny because I can read it in my head the correct way, but then I say it out loud. It doesn't work.
Okay. Oh, he's going to go to jail for this.
Yeah. So he is sentenced to 55 years in prison.
Oh, God.
He's 36.
I actually cannot stomach the wrongful conviction cases.
I know.
It is so painful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I don't. It's so wrong for everybody involved.
I know.
Which maybe that's why. It's all really fucking bad.
It's all really fucking bad.
And it's new victims that sometimes don't have anything to do with it.
Yep.
Oh, God. No. Okay. Like this, exactly.
Yeah. So when the conviction is read, he's basically being found guilty, Melinda breaks down in the courtroom and she looks to her sister and says, you know it wasn't him. Which is also, this is your fucking daughter that this happened to. I can't really blame April.
No. No, like, of course not.
No, it's like, I'm believing my child.
Yes.
As you should.
Yes, but to be the wife of was like knowing
yeah.
that we were actually together. There's, right. If you're hopeless.
Yeah.
There's it's really
fucking hopeless.
It's just, yeah, it's just so bad.
It makes so me sick. Fucking bad. Yeah. So for the record, Linda didn't think that Brooke was lying about what she saw. She thinks she was just confused.
Right. Okay.
Because it was dark. It was like Brooke.
Yeah. So she's like, I'm not even holding this against
yeah,
her.
Yeah. No, that's like, good. She's also a fucking child.
Yeah.
Who was
I know, but I think that like terrorized. A petty or an ignorant person or maybe just totally. A really angry person could find a lot of reasons to blame a child. Yeah, I mean, think people are shitty to children anyway.
Like, and we'll get to some people who are shitty to children.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So she was just like, it's not your fault, but like, I need to basically...
Because I was with him. So I know it
yeah.
was is not possible.
But like, you're also six and you were fucking brutalized and terrorized.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it's your fault, essentially, which yeah. I think is probably the best way to handle this. I don't know.
It's the most mature.
Yeah. So Brooke was only 6 years old when she witnessed what happened to her grandma Judy and also what happened to her. And the house was dark and she popped in for a second. She said most of the time the man's head was turned. And, like, at some point, she, like, turns back and looks at her, is what she says. So even Brooke says that the man that night had dark hair and was taller like her Uncle Clarence. So it was probably, like, it was the closest man yes. to her that wasn't her fucking father.
Yes.
It was probably something in her brain that was, like...
it was the most equivalent
yeah, way the to most describe equivalent,
a yeah, complete absolutely. Stranger
yeah.
and a traumatic experience. Totally. No, it makes a lot of sense.
Totally. So we're going to fast forward to 2002.
Okay. Many years.
Yeah. So it's been 4 years since the attack. A now 10-year-old Brooke, she recants her original testimony after talking intensely with her mother and then actually Melinda at some point. So April and Melinda hadn't been talking for these 4 years.
Okay.
And Melinda eventually shows up at the door. She's like, I just want to know what happens regardless. I want to know
the truth. I want to hear it from her.
Yeah. And so Brooke is like, I don't think it actually was Uncle Clarence.
Because, okay. Yeah. Okay.
So Brooke recants her original testimony in a deposition.
Oh my God.
And so she's like, I don't think it was him. And she talks specifically about the eyes. Because Clarence has blue eyes. And Brooke says that the guy who hurt her and killed her grandmother had brown eyes. So, well, one thing to remember is she's like, the man had brown eyes. I actually don't think it was Uncle Clarence.
Right, because like, she must have such a clear memory of mm-hmm, those eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
It's like the one thing she remembers.
Yeah.
So she goes to deposition, she goes under oath, and she says, I am now recanting my testimony. I don't think it was Uncle Clarence. I think it was somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So Brooke Lair says that she was always unsure that it was Clarence that might have been there that night. And eventually she kind of knew it was wrong. That now he was in prison for it. She's like, this is the wrong person.
Yeah.
As a 10-year-old, it's a lot of fucking weight to win a child.
It's already way too much.
Yes.
And it's just, oh God, I can't. She's so strong.
Mm-hmm. Smart, strong girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now with Brooke recanting her testimony, which is basically the whole reason why this case went to trial, Melinda petitions and appeals for a new trial for Clarence.
Okay.
But it's denied.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So the court says that Brooke's recanting her statement is not credible and suggests that she may have been influenced and coerced
over the years by the
family. By people who want Clarence freed.
Okay.
Which, I guess?
I mean, okay. But did anybody from the court talk to her? It's just crazy that you can just make a decision. Just like someone's I read it and that's what I decided.
Yeah.
Could someone have a conversation with the fucking girl first? Because right? like words matter.
Child psychologist?
Yes. I just feel like energy matters.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The presence of a human in right? front of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like just to read about it.
I need a child psychologist to come in and talk to this little girl and be yeah. like, tell me what you remember. Let's get this on fucking record without any sort of influence Listen. From anybody.
It's just places where hubris is allowed to go unchecked is a real problem. And I would say that there's a couple of areas, like many areas, but like the law is one of them, which is a big problem.
Yeah.
Medical field is another one.
Totally.
Yeah. The presidency could be another one, but sometimes it's not even hubris. It's just...
Intelligence?
Senile. It's fucking, I don't know, biology. I don't fucking know. I'm just sick
it's
of like
good.
Men making sweeping fucking judgments about yeah. shit. Like,
we need to stop doing that.
I can't.
We need to stop doing that. Can we stop doing that? Question mark?
I'm having a rough day.
I gave Meg a rough night. I'm so sorry.
So I really try not to be like stupidly against the other gender. But I'm sorry. I'm making an assumption that it was a male judge that was just like, whomever.
I don't believe women. I mean, there's Melinda talks about how during this time that because she was adamant. She was,
well, if she was with him, she reasonably should be.
Yeah, she was fighting for him.
Yes.
And she was talking about how people just continued to disregard her. They ostracized her. They basically looked at her like she was fucking a crazy woman who just stood by her man.
Yeah, and that's not,
yeah.
Well, we don't like that either, mm-mm. by the way.
No, we don't like that either. And there's an example of that in here.
Yeah.
And so it just,
it's gonna get worse.
It gets worse. But Melinda, after this, basically this appeal is denied, she gets to work.
Okay. Okay.
And
you're going to take a break?
I think we should take a break.
Okay.
Actually, it feels like a good place to take a break. Yeah. It feels early, but we'll take a break.
God. Yeah. I need to reset.
We can reset. It's fine. We'll be right back.
Not all paths are straight. Some twist deep into the unknown. Hey, I'm Amanda Joy. And every Thursday, a new episode of Down the Crooked Path beckons. Paranormal stories, strange encounters, and folklore that lingers long after dark. So take a deep breath, grab your flashlight, or let the mysteries guide your steps. Down the Crooked Path, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, we're back. So, do you have any idea where we're at?
Hold on. I think Melinda's on the warpath now.
Yes. Yeah. Melinda's on the warpath. Mm-hmm. Basically, Clarence got convicted. He got thrown in jail for 55 years. Brooke recants her entire testimony, and they're like, hey, can we get a new trial?
And it went nowhere.
And the prosecution and the judge are like, no.
Whomever.
And she's all right, well, I'm going to figure this out.
Okay.
Melinda's doing the work. So you're right.
Sorry. It's like he's really lucky to have somebody like her in his life. I know.
Yeah.
Damn.
So Melinda reaches out to a PI. His name is Martin Yant.
I want to be a PI so bad.
We've talked about this. We can be PIs together.
I know. I figure out how to do that.
So he specializes in wrongful conviction cases, and he helps with getting them overturned.
Okay.
And she also, at some point, reaches out to the Ohio Innocence Project.
As you should.
As you should. So Melinda starts making a list of convicted offenders that lived near her mother and who could have easy access to her, which is, I think, a good place to start.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Melinda and Martin begin going over the case file, and the first thing...
Sorry, Melinda's like, now I need to investigate this case?
Yeah, Melinda's like, look at me. I'm the captain now.
I'm the captain
literally,
now.
Literally, Melinda's the captain now.
Okay, so she's entering broad territory.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Oh, she's abroad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Melinda and Martin begin going over the case file, and the first thing they debunk is the phone call that Judy's friend claimed to have witnessed stand.
I didn't ask you a zillion questions about it, but yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure her name was Patricia.
Wait, Patricia's fucking man is responsible for this? I'm sorry.
No.
Okay. I was like, who?
That was
is Patricia
Tanya.
The bitch that's standing by her man?
No, Patricia is
you said
like,
we would find...
We would. We will.
But not Patricia.
No.
Gotcha.
Patricia's just like the friend who makes up this fucking crazy story.
Why?
I don't know.
Okay, tell me more about this. This is insane.
Yeah. So Patricia had claimed that Judy had called 911 and filed their police report after getting the threatening phone call from Clarence. Remember what she said. She's like, Clarence called Judy, basically threatened her because Judy was meddling in him and Melinda's marriage.
Okay. A man called, but she said Clarence.
Is it true
that a man called? Could they prove that?
I don't think so.
Okay. So you think she just made this up?
Yeah. So what? She says that Judy called 911 and filed a police report.
And that she didn't?
But that report or log of the call...
Never existed.
Never existed. She just straight fucking lied.
That is so inappropriate and bizarre.
I agree.
Okay, so there was no proof of any... No phone call, no...
What other scenario could have happened there?
Do you think it's possible that she didn't say that and someone was just like, well, never mind. Now I mean,
she may have heard secondhand. I'm just really wanted to be a part of the
maybe or now I'm in conspiracy land. Like they were like trying to bolster the case that had nothing.
Oh, maybe.
Which is
crazy.
Also crazy.
Yeah. I mean, there has been multiple cases where prosecutors kind of create evidence to fit their narrative.
Oh.
I don't know if that's for this case, but there are cases that are out there like okay. that. Yeah. Because I think they get tunnel vision.
Sure.
Because I think most of the time prosecutors are right. Let's be real. Most of the time it's basically innocent until proven guilty, but a lot of times there's so much evidence. It's like,
right.
You're fucking guilty.
Yeah. And like the word of the victim, mm-hmm. you know, if that's the way
you and usually they're advocating for the victim, right? And so they usually are on the stance of, I know what you did. Like, I'm trying to prove that you did it. And so I think most of the time they think that they are right. I think they usually are. And I think because of Brooke, they were like, we know what happened, right?
Yeah. We're just going to get justice.
I'm not saying that they made up evidence for this case.
Right.
I'm
just saying, are definitely not saying that.
No, I'm just saying but prosecutors.
I actually took it there. That was crazy.
Yeah, but I am saying that prosecutors do often do that or have done that.
Okay.
Not often, but they have done that, I think, in other cases.
Like they will maybe eventually cover? Yeah, like the West Memphis 3 seemed like the type of.
Yes. Yes, what I was thinking that actually
is that exactly what you were thinking about?
Yeah. So another thing uncovered by Martin and Melinda is the fact that Judy had also been assaulted, and there were vaginal swabs done during the autopsy.
Okay, I didn't know that. I don't think you mentioned that.
Because this is also when they found out about this.
Oh, okay. So he was just going out. He was beating and raping whomever.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, a psycho.
So the swabs tested positive for an acid phosphate, which is an enzyme found in the prostate. So it's absolutely from the killer and the person who raped her, aka a man, and they're not from Judy.
I'm sorry. And I have a biological question. Is prostate enzyme in it every time? Is it?
I'll look around the room for a doctor. I don't know.
I didn't expect you to say prostate enzyme.
I'm assuming it
is. How does that get in there?
I don't know. It's something specifically that comes from a man, I think, is what you need to focus on. I mean,
we don't have them.
I don't have a prostate. Last time I checked.
But. Since it's the last time you checked.
When's the last time I investigated my own prostate? Never.
All right, so she's accepting offers. I'm so sorry.
I did the prostate.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
You're fucking diabolical.
You can cut it. You should cut it.
I am not.
Please carry on.
We do some levity.
I'm just like, what is that doing there?
Basically, what I'm saying is that this fucking enzyme found in this DNA swab comes from a man. They know 100% it comes from a man.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, the question isn't, what did a woman do it? That was never the question.
No, but so these swabs are never tested for DNA against Clarence or anybody else.
Oh, so it was a very easy, like, what the fuck?
It's an easy solve. It's okay, an easy fucking solve.
Who's Clarence's goddamn lawyer?
What the fuck?
Great question.
But no one knew this until now?
Yes.
4 years later.
We will get into more of that later.
So this is also where the case gets even more infuriating, because it's not just that there was no physical evidence tying Clarence to the crime. There's also physical evidence that could have pointed away from him and that it was not fully pursued by investigators.
Yeah. Okay. Well, sure. I'm sure there was a lot.
So the Ohio Innocence Project gets involved in 2004, and this is because of Melinda and Martin Yates. And the DNA testing is done on several pieces of evidence. So there's also, I think there was a pubic hair found on Brooke.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Pubic hair and 6-year-olds, those don't go together. I know. They should not exist in the same sentence.
I know. And there's also multiple different types of evidence found on Judy.
Okay. God, I need to know who this monster piece of shit is.
We'll get into the monster piece of shit. So the testing excludes Clarence
from the biological material covered from Judy and Brooke.
Wow, that's pretty important.
And this is including from Judy's fingernails because she scratched at this person.
Yeah, there's just no way. If he was the guy, it would match.
And from Brooke's underwear.
Jesus.
I'm so sorry.
Okay. All right, let's move on. I'm sorry. I'm speechless. I don't know words. Okay.
So even more importantly, the testing shows the same unknown male DNA profile in evidence connected both victims. It's coming from both Brooke and Judy. It's the same fucking person that did this.
That's,
So it's the same man that attacked Judy and Brooke. And that man was not Clarence.
Yeah.
They basically determined that from this evidence.
God bless the Innocence Project.
Yes. So for a second time, an appeal and the petition is filed for a retrial. And basically at this point, I think the exoneration of Clarence. But once again, it's denied.
Oh, wow.
So there's something, so I guess there's a tier of DNA evidence. And I think specifically in 2003, 2004, the DNA evidence was skin cell DNA evidence. And that is not, the top tier is kind of bodily fluids.
Okay.
And the DNA evidence at this point is coming from skin cells, not bodily fluids, because the DNA.
Okay, but if a random man's skin cells that shouldn't be there is there, that still.
I'm not saying you're not wrong. Matters. I'm just saying that's kind of part of the logic for the denial. I'm trying to give you kind of context. Okay. But so there's a so tier.
Like it doesn't meet our requirement or threshold for.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So the prosecution is also saying that the swabs could have been contaminated at some point.
Okay, fine.
So they're basically saying the DNA samples are not viable because they're skin cell DNA samples, not bodily fluids. Basically, they can be contaminated in the exchange process that's happening.
Okay, and yet, evidence. If you look at the evidence, if it is like someone it would make sense that they would be contaminated with, fine. If it's a criminal, do you know what I mean? Or like a weird neighbor or like someone it makes sense with.
They're not going to do that cross-examination because they still think that Clarence is the guy.
Okay.
So they're saying
technically he is the guy. He's the guy.
Well, they're like, he's been convicted. Yeah, so Clarence is the guy. They're like, this is the guy. We don't need to test against anybody else in the area. They're saying that like this DNA sample, the skin cell DNA sample is coming from a contamination in maybe the exchange of evidence.
And then maybe it not be. Okay. So, okay.
Type of situation.
We're not convinced.
So yeah, they're not convinced. Ugh. They're denying it again.
Okay. Because now you're guilty.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the reasoning still is that Brooke's identification of Clarence is at the heart of the original conviction. But they're saying like, it's not DNA, it's Brooke.
But she said no. But she was tainted.
But she was tainted. She was coerced. She was coached to say it was somebody else. And so they're like, even though there is this new DNA evidence.
It can't be the only thing. I'm sorry. I know. It can't be the only thing.
So they're basically saying this, like, this new DNA evidence is not necessarily changing the outcome.
You know what is so upsetting about it? Is that so many things can happen. If you're like, oh, it could be contaminated. Oh, it could be X, Y, and Z. It could be poor collection. That can happen anyway. It's like, it's hard because it's like some things really do need to be black and white.
Yeah.
And then you're in a situation where like it's so black and white that you can't even see what you're looking at. And life, man.
That's the narrative of this life, man.
Oh God. Okay. I need it here. Okay.
Make it. Also, just there is an opportunity to retest everything.
Yeah.
To just be like, let's just.
But someone has to pay for that.
Yeah.
And I
think
that has a lot to do with this.
But I mean, at this point, Melinda's knocking on people's fucking doors. She's not backing down.
Yeah.
Be like, let's prove this bitch wrong.
Okay.
You know, I'm coming from the prosecutor standpoint. Like, let's show her.
I really would love to know.
The mindset?
Yeah.
Of who?
Everyone? I would love to know what it's like to be in the churn of it. So that is it just, it's just yet another case file. It's just another number. It's just like.
Totally.
I don't know. I feel like what the problem is, there's so much nuance in life.
Yeah. Nuance is hard. I think kind of the tiers of DNA evidence is also kind of crucial in this story because of the skin cells versus the body fluid.
And I understand that.
Yeah. I'm not saying people don't understand that. I think they could just disregard it so quickly. It's crazy. Right.
It's one of those things that I do think you need standards.
Yes.
And systems. Mm-hmm. And here we are looking mm-hmm. at one it doesn't quite fit.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't fit into the right box right. or whatever.
And we have like
eyewitness. It doesn't take account for any gray area, any nuance.
Yeah. We also want to pretend that this 6-year-old girl wasn't telling the truth, I guess. Sure. We believe this little 6-year-old girl who said that what she saw.
Well, that is really optimistic of you to say.
That is the optimistic approach, I think, in general for this. But it's just interesting that the lack of just interest to be like, I actually want to see if this is matching.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
For my own well-being as a prosecutor. Did I put the wrong fucking person in jail?
Oh.
Or an investigative standpoint. I want to actually know if this is the right guy.
It does sound like they just file it away as a win or a loss. It's like a tunnel
vision.
Just I don't want to deal with it later. I don't know. Maybe it's hard to do that. I don't know.
I don't know. It's probably... Yeah,
how often do you have to go back on your decisions at work? Decide, but it's different because people's lives.
Yeah, like I'm not.
It's a personally a higher bar.
Yeah, you have one of the highest bars out there.
I know.
And you kind of have to be a self-aware and kind of self-police yourself to be like, am I making my own assumptions mm-hmm. here, or do I need to do some due diligence and figure it out?
I know it's a lot of complicated fucking work.
Yeah. Check yourself.
Yeah.
You know.
Interesting.
So Melinda is furious at this outcome, as I would be, as I think any of us would be, because mm-hmm. you're like, I fucking know, but he didn't
fucking do it. It's right here. I provided it for you.
What else do you want me to do? She's also funding all of this.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So she decides to conduct her own forensic investigation.
Okay.
Taking tips from forensic files. Because as you would.
Wait, what do you mean her own? She hired someone?
No, no, no.
What?
We'll get in. Yeah, pour some wine.
I'm sorry.
Fucking what? Pony up, bitch.
There you go.
Hey, other girl.
Okay, I'm listening.
Okay, so Melinda, she's a true crime girly. She watches these
shows.
Well,
now she is.
Now she is, yeah.
Yeah.
So she watches shows like Forensic Files.
Okay.
Which, if you've ever been in a hotel at midnight, it's the only show you want to watch.
Well, I'm not turning the TV on.
Oh, I usually am.
Well, that's because you don't watch TV on your phone. You need those apps. You need Netflix.
I'm not.
You need Hulu.
I'm not watching TV on my phone. I already have bad enough eyesight. Okay? We literally talked about how many glasses. Literally, it was prescribed. I haven't gotten them yet. Anyway, she's watching Forensic Files, like me.
Okay.
So she uses tips on how to collect DNA evidence from watching Forensic Files. And then she takes the list of convicted criminals from the area that her mother was in.
No way.
And she basically starts collecting DNA of these men on the fucking list.
How does she find them?
So
she can't be working and doing all this.
She's working too.
Damn.
So she follows these guys to bars and strip clubs. And she strikes up a conversation. She starts flirting with them. And she also, while she's doing all this, she has little baggies, gloves. She's ready to grab whatever they leave behind.
How is she finding them? She's got it in court files or something?
Look up Friend of the Offender.
I'm sorry. She must have narrowed it down to...
She looked at the men in her mother's fucking neighborhood.
She probably had a... She'd been studying. This is a lot of admin.
I know.
This is a lot of fucking research.
I know.
She loves this man.
I know.
Oh my God. I hope that they end up together. God forbid. God forbid it just doesn't work out after all that. And it wouldn't change anything because she's
But regardless of Clarence, this is the guy that murdered her fucking mother.
So she's got...
Right, and assaulted her niece.
Yeah, so she's like, it's not entirely about him.
No, this is vigilante to the core.
They need to make a movie about this fucking bitch. Are you kidding me?
It's crazy.
Okay,
it's crazy. So yeah, she's following this guy. She's flirting with them. She's talking to him. She's chatting them up. She's also waiting for them to leave. She grabs their beer bottles, their cigarette butts, their straws, whatever she could get hold of.
This has got to be so not legal.
It's legal.
It's legal?
Because once you discard something, it's fucking legal to grab.
That's fair.
It's
trash. That's why they can grab your trash.
That's right. Why they can grab their trash. And she learned that from fucking Forensic Files. Trash is legal to grab. You can grab your trash.
Amazing. Oh my
my God. Okay. Let's write a movie. Who says we can't fucking write the
movie?
We can
write the movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Love it. So she takes all their DNA. She has it tested against the swabs from the crime. And
that can't be cheap either.
Mm-mm. And she starts like GoFundMes. Not GoFundMes. That didn't exist at this point. But she starts like crowdsourcing. Yeah. And she does raise some funds. I think now people are like, oh, shit. After the second appeal, there's some DNA evidence. There's also Brooke saying it wasn't him. They're like, people are like kind of following it now. They're like,
okay,
we should help.
Oh, and interesting. So she's like, oh, he was appealed twice. Then he definitely did it. So it could go either way.
I think I do agree. I think it depends on the notion of the appeal.
Okay.
I think the fact that there was like DNA evidence proving that it wasn't Clarence. And then also Brooke was like,
one eyewitness
is like, hey, it's not.
In 2000, I don't know. Between 2002 and 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, you're still like pounding the pavement to get support.
So unfortunately, all of these efforts don't match the swabs that came from the autopsy and
stuff. Because you're just like,
yeah, she's literally just finding men
fishing
just
in the dark.
She's really fishing in the dark, but she's finding the worst of the worst in the out there, and she's like, talking to him.
God, I hope she's packing.
Yeah. In my brain, she is. She's ready. She's also maybe taking some Krav Maga.
Krav Maga.
Yeah.
What is that? What the fuck is that?
It's jujitsu.
No. She does not need to be spending.
No.
No.
You're going to edit that from the script?
I just want to like, I'm sorry. Krav Maga seems like she's already quite fucking busy. I didn't think she even had a job. Now she even needs to be doing Krav Maga and like have an expert to the point where she can defend herself against violent criminals. No, she needs to shorten.
I'm sorry.
She needs a gun. Okay. This is
girl,
the most Republican I will ever be. Ladies need to be packing, okay?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So these DNA tests don't match the men that she's finding, she's collecting evidence on. So she then sees an article in the paper about a guy being convicted of sexually assaulting his three daughters.
Okay, and that just clicks stars.
And his name is Earl Mann.
Okay. God, what are the chances of this?
So,
okay.
Melinda looks up this dude in the Ohio Offender Registry.
She has got her eyes fucking peeled.
Mm-hmm. And she sees this picture and thinks this guy could maybe pass for Clarence in the dark.
Oh, that helps. Oh, because, okay, so thank you for reminding me. Because
it's just two white dudes in the dark.
This is the one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but I forgot that she does have a baseline of like, at least he tall must white man. Look. Okay, so that's not just a sweeping swath of just offenders. They have to meet. Yeah. And she knows brown eyes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So. And just for the record, he looks a little bit like Aaron Hernandez. I'm just going to say
a little
that.
Bit. Okay. Yeah, totally.
We're carrying on.
So there's another coincidence. Do you remember the neighbor who Brooke sat outside the house the morning of the attack?
Yeah.
Do you want to guess who that home belongs to?
Well, that's Tanya. It belonged to him?
Tanya's his common-in-law wife.
His wife.
Yeah.
So she knew. Or she might have known? Do you think she knew?
She knew. I was waiting for that click for you. Yeah. So Brooke, she goes a door down to the next home, knocks on Tanya's door.
And she'd never seen this man before? The neighbor? He was the neighbor? She'd never seen him?
Because he had just gone out of jail 3 days prior.
Okay, so Tanya's like, my man, my violent man who's been in jail is home.
Mm-hmm. He's also pissed that Brooke knocked on his door.
Okay, but that happened afterwards.
The next morning.
I guess what I'm thinking, Tanya's, is she putting it together?
Yes.
In real time?
Uh-huh.
My violent, because you said he was in jail for assaulting these little girls?
No, he was in jail for assault and robbery.
Assault and robbery.
Yes.
So not sex crimes.
Not the morning that Brooke knocked on the door.
What? Okay, so when he was in... I'm sorry.
So
tell me more about this man.
So Earl Mann had been serving some time for assault and robbery, was released on June 4th, 1998. Judy is murdered, assaulted, and Brooke was also assaulted on the night of June 6th into June 7th, 1998.
Okay. I know, but didn't you say he had assaulted children?
So Melinda finds this newspaper article. The newspaper article is specifying the fact that Earl is arrested for assaulting his three daughters, also Tanya's children.
Okay, so later.
Yes. In 2004.
Oh, so he goes on to assault their children.
Yes.
His three daughters. But you know what, though? Oh, God. I'm just like, she probably knew that he was a sicko.
Tanya was also arrested in 1994 for child endangerment. I didn't tell you that initially.
So maybe he hadn't been caught for it, but there's a chance.
Oh, she fucking knew.
She fucking knew.
So, okay, yeah. That makes sense. So the article is specifying the fact that Earl Mann is... Basically, he's arrested for assaulting his three daughters and for assault and robbery again.
Yeah.
He's also given a very lenient sentence. He is sentenced in, I think, 2004, and he is set to be released in 2009. For assaulting his three daughters.
I would love to know, like, how that all happened. Who called
the shots?
How did he get caught for that? With the daughters?
I don't know, because Tanya's also at that time convicted of child endangerment as well.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, he's definitely an enormous piece of shit.
They're both pieces of shit, I think, in my opinion. Tanya's not protecting her daughters from... her common-in-law husband, Earl. And Earl is assaulting...
Yeah, I think that's clear. I think sometimes we need to be conscious of the amount of coercive control and abuse that happens in relationships with people like this.
Okay.
She might have been afraid of him, among other things. That doesn't absolve her because, you know, you need to take care of your children. But
yeah,
I think it adds a layer of complexity, is all I'm saying.
Okay. I think it gets to a point where I... can no longer overlook the complexity of
it. So I guess in the timeline, I'm just trying to understand. He'd been in prison, and it's likely, given whom he is, mm-hmm. who he is, that she knew he was also a sick piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets... Maybe she already knew that. Yeah. Maybe she already knew that he was abusing their children.
She was already convicted of child endangerment in 1994. And the crime happened in 1998.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So she did know. Yeah.
She probably knew.
He has
So he gets out of prison. Mm-hmm. 3 days later, the neighbor's dead and this little girl is brutalized, knocking
on her door covered in blood.
Well, it makes sense why she's like, I don't know how to handle this.
Yes.
She probably called him. There was a lot of...
No, he was there.
Oh, then they argued about it, whatever. And then she decided...
to take her back to her mom.
And listen, oh God, I can't believe I'm about to say this. But was that the most heroic thing that she could do? Because, like, I bet he wanted to kill that little girl.
I think if Brooke would have gone inside, she maybe would have never come out.
I agree.
I was thinking that actually when I was reading the story.
So was this her way?
But she also...
It doesn't make her...
coerced Brooke into saying it was her Uncle Clarence. Because then Tanya does also go on the stand under...
Oh, my God, you're right.
Under oath and saying she said it was her Uncle Clarence that did this.
Again, listen, I'm saying Tanya is a piece. But I think that Tanya is potentially in an environment where she's also terrified for her life and the life of her children. And maybe she's... deeply fucked up. And I'm wondering if she saved that little girl's life in some way.
Probably keeping her on the outside on the porch is probably the closest she will ever get to saving this little girl's life.
That's a fair statement. The closest she will ever get.
Yeah, I definitely have less.
This is complicated, okay?
This is complicated. I have less empathy because this man brutalized your fucking daughters.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she's a piece of shit mom, obviously.
Yeah. And for me, it's just like, I'm going to say about my man.
Wow, this is, wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Honestly, the movie is writing itself. I'm sorry. The movie is, it's written.
She is written.
As it is written. Layers.
So Melinda sees all of this, and it's basically a slot machine. She's just won the jackpot. She figures out that Earl was right next to her mom. She's like, okay, I can see why he kind of looks like Clarence in the dark.
It's like a... just a normal, skinny, tall, white dude.
Right. Yeah. And so Clarence's defense attorneys, the Ohio Innocence Project, they look up Earl Mann's rap sheet, and it's fucking pages long at this point.
Ugh.
This guy should have never been a fucking let out of jail.
God damn it.
He's abusing children and he got let out. He also got a shorter fucking sentence at this point after abusing.
I don't think it's cool, but I just want to reiterate that he has a slight resemblance to Aaron Hernandez. And I'm sorry, attractive people do get treated better than other people in life.
I'm just saying, at this point, this guy had a massive rap sheet.
Disgusting. Okay.
And I think, sorry, maybe this is going to be a little bit too problematic. Oh. If you abuse a kid fucking once, life in prison. I don't know why we're giving these people lenient sentences. If you're abusing a 10-year-old sexually, physically, anything, you need to stay
sexually or physically.
You need to stay in fucking jail. Sorry.
Hey, listen.
I'm not the person that's going to make those stipulations and those guidelines for that.
For like how, where you draw the line.
Yeah, where you draw the line, but.
Listen, it's not, that's not a, fine. It's not controversial. Have you seen that interview with Kevin Gates who talks about, do you know who Kevin Gates is?
I don't think so.
The rapper.
Okay.
He's in an interview and he talks about having been molested as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And like all but, not even all but, admits that he and or his family and or friends flat out murdered the guy. I'll have to send this to you. And then it's just like the entire internet being like, yes, and.
Yeah.
Like,
go on, queen.
Yeah, you touch a kid, you're going to die. It's literally what he says.
Yeah. Yeah. And we listened to the fucking Disgraceland about, oh my God. Ian was his name?
Ian Watkins? Yeah, I've never met an Ian I liked, by the way.
The guy from Lost Prophets who was basically given jailhouse justice.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, and the fact that basically people just didn't believe. It's just, I'm sorry, if you are convicted and found guilty of crimes against children like this, you should not be in public. You should not be in the fucking society. You belong in jail, if maybe not on the ground.
You're not, this is not radical.
Okay.
Okay, you're good.
I'm some. I'm just a better president.
Oh, well, listen.
You aren't listening to Wesley anyways.
Yeah, I was like, it doesn't count.
If you're rich?
I don't know. MAGA doesn't care.
Yeah, I don't think MAGA cares as long as it's someone that aligns with their cult following.
So it's not about kids. It's just, it's impossible
no, they
that our Lord and Savior, yeah. Donald Trump.
Could, yeah. They've fucking doubled down on it. I'm sorry.
It's disturbing.
Yeah. Yeah. So Melinda, Clarence defense attorneys, the Ohio Innocence Project, they're like, this is the fucking guy. We found him. This is the guy.
Yeah. And it actually was just the neighbor.
The you neighbor. You
fucking pieces of shit.
You fucking pieces of shit. And it gets so much worse.
Oh.
So Earl Mann had actually been on law enforcement's radar before Clarence ever went to trial.
No.
So in January of 1999, while the investigation into Judy's murder and Brooke's assault was still going on, Earl Mann was arrested for two violent robberies. So during that arrest, Mann allegedly asked a Barberton police officer, quote, why don't you charge me with the Judy Johnson murder?
He said it himself.
He said it himself.
Why would he say that? Is he insane?
He was a little drunk.
Got it.
Yeah.
Oh, he was.
You need to say about liquor, though.
Oh, my God.
Makes you loose-lipped.
I know. And yeah, he just must have been feeling himself like.
So this officer who arrested Mann wrote an interdepartmental memo about the statement that he said.
Because that's crazy.
That's crazy. And he sent it to a detective in the bureau
okay.
that was investigating this crime. But Clarence's defense never got that fucking memo.
Who would have had to turn that over?
The investigators of the crime itself.
I'm wondering who. I was like, he had an absolute shit ass attorney.
They never gave it to him.
Okay. Okay. I guess.
Sure.
Is that, then that's illegal?
That's illegal.
Is this a Brady violation?
This is a 100% Brady
okay,
violation.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, where are we going here?
So the prosecution claims that they never got the memo either.
No. Okay.
Maybe. I think the police were just like, no, we got the guy. We don't need to. Don't worry about this.
Do you think it's possible? Is it as stupid as like it all happened and then they read their emails because it was like months later? Is that how backed up we are on emails? Like, because
it was paperwork.
Okay, then
fine.
I'm like, these memos are supposed to be checked daily.
They are supposed to be checked daily.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So someone was checking these fucking memos.
Got it. Okay.
Fair.
All right. That was my question.
So Clarence went to trial without his attorneys knowing about Judy's neighbor, about Earl Mann. And so he fucking lived right next to Judy. Oh. And he lived in the house that Brooke ran to for help.
God, what a nightmare.
And then, like,
she could have gone the other direction. They're so neat.
But then there's also the weird fucking interaction where Tanya makes her sit in the fucking
stoop. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, it makes it for 45 minutes. Actually makes perfect sense now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, it gives all of the reason for a reasonable doubt.
Yes.
If the defense knew this, they could have been like, let's test this man's DNA.
Yeah.
Because it's on fucking file.
Ugh. God. Did they do that once they got this information today?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals would say that the case against Clarence was, quote, flimsy at best.
Yeah. Okay.
And
that's polite.
And so this memo would have cast serious doubt on Brooke's identification of Clarence.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, sorry, basically. So here's the issue at this point. So they know that basically Melinda, the Innocence Project, and his defense, Clarence's defense attorneys are like, we have our guy. Mm-hmm. We know who the fucking is. But Earl Mann is in prison.
Okay.
And the prosecution investigators are not willing to help because they think they put the right guy away years ago at this point.
Okay.
They're like, Clarence is a guy. I don't want to hear from you anymore, essentially.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So then that's what I would love to ask about. I would love to why you're not still curious. You think you can't make any mistakes or time can change things.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre.
Yeah. I agree.
I feel like it's hubris, but whatever.
Right. It's like, you're not just, you want to fucking know?
Yeah.
Because also you're like convicting a man. Because
what does it have to do with you? I don't know. It's got to have something to do with their fucking manhood.
I think it's an ego. I think it really is an ego. It's very
bizarre. I don't know.
Yeah. So they're not just going to test Earl Mann's DNA from Judy's body in Brooke's, you know, rape kit against Earl Mann. They're like, we're not going to do that. We know who is in jail. It's the guy who did it.
Okay.
You need to fucking let this go. And they're basically, they're treating Melinda like a, for lack of a better word, like a hick. They're like, this is just some uneducated woman who's like,
yeah, okay,
standing by her man, you know.
It's noisy and
yes,
just like this little gnat.
Yes, 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 yes. She's being a Karen at this point, you know.
Okay.
So Melinda is like, okay, how can I get Earl Mann's DNA from prison? So she starts writing Earl flirty letters.
She's listen, it's actually pretty easy.
I actually get the know.
God, listen, I'm dying to know what happens. She's waiting for him to write her back.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was like, did she ask him to come in the letter?
No. She's writing him flirty letters like a pen pal. Like, I'm just, like, lonely. I just really want someone to talk to. Just basically.
So easy.
Yeah, she's playing stupid, playing like a dumb bimbo, essentially. Just trying to really.
She clips a sexy photo out of a magazine that's not even
she's
her.
She's really trying to lean into this man's fucking ego.
Of course.
Yeah. She also gives him return envelopes to send back to her.
Because she's trying to get that spit DNA.
She's trying to get saliva. Okay. Yes. Because bodily fluid DNA is more significant than
of course skin she knows. Cell.
She fucking knows. But Earl doesn't write back because he was transferred to a different prison.
Okay, keep writing, girl.
But in a weird twist, Earl is actually in the same prison as Clarence.
Oh, okay.
Melinda's husband.
Okay, how does that?
And even better, he's in the same fucking housing pod as Clarence. Oh,
so Clarence is tracking all this.
Clarence is in fucking jail. He's been talking to Melinda the entire time because Melinda's saying about her man. Wait,
that bitch is here.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I'm fucking
Clarence
serious.
Clarence is going to solve his own wrongful termination case from prison? What is life? We're in a simulation. This is not
crazy. Real. So there's like 30 to 35 people per housing pod. And Clarence or Earl are in the same housing pod in prison.
The only thing that I think he probably wants to do more than collect this man's DNA is fucking kill him. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
oh my
the
God.
Self-restraint.
I know.
It would have to take.
Yeah, to like not just fucking kill.
Because that gets you nowhere.
It doesn't.
But he does deserve it.
Yeah.
a shank or two. You know?
What is a shank?
A shank is a little tiny.
Oh, shank!
Shank.
Yeah. A shank. Yeah. Okay, I thought you said a shake. I was like, I'm beating head into concrete. What are you talking about?
I'm talking a shank and a shiv.
Shank. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yes.
Someone's like, okay, with her fucking forensic file knowledge now, she was like, okay, I need you to get a piece of clean tissue and
grab whatever the thing is.
Grab whatever you can find that he discards. Specifically, because you have to throw in the garbage for it to be like admissible as evidence, right?
Okay. Yes, of course. I'm just like, the stress of this in prison
has to be like a paper cup, a cigarette butt, something that he throws away. Just like, you have to find something that he throws away.
But how can you prove that came from him? I don't know.
We'll get there. So Clarence is now a crucial player into basically exonerating himself.
All right, but it adds a layer of like
complexity.
Yes,
totally.
Because if we think you're the guy that did it, and then you're the guy that collects the evidence that is on the other guy, and then the other guy, but you're the guy that touched it with a Kleenex, and then the DNA matches, then but we thought you did it anyway.
Do you know what I mean? Having an image of like Charlie Day with like all the red string.
You brought us to this episode. I'm just saying, the guy we think already did it, collecting the evidence, is not ideal.
No, it's not. Okay. So one day, Clarence sees Earl smoke a cigarette and puts the cigarette out in a clean ashtray.
Okay.
Which is perfect.
Okay, clean ashtray sounds like an oxymoron, but I'm listening.
Well, I mean, an ashtray doesn't have other cigarette butts in it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, okay. So he's got nothing but time on his hands. He's going to watch this man like a hawk.
Like, what am I going to fucking do?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Clarence picks up the cigarette butt with a tissue and stores it in the Bible. And he's waits to be able to send out to get tested for DNA because now he has to wait for a Ziploc baggie.
Yeah.
Your entire life is teetering on a fucking Ziploc baggie.
You know.
Is crazy.
Yeah.
So he waits nearly 2 weeks to get a clean Ziploc bag.
Okay, but again, he was going to be there anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, but still.
Mm-hmm. It's not like this is going to move quickly.
It's like, can either I roll way. Get a fucking bag in here? And he basically put the cigarette butt with the tissue in the Ziploc bag. And then he mails it to his defense attorney. I think he mails it to his defense attorney specifically because I don't think that the correspondence can be like inspected. Because he doesn't mail it to...
between your attorney.
Yeah, he doesn't mail it to Melinda. He mails it to his defense attorney.
Okay.
Attorney-client privilege.
Right.
Perhaps.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. So then the cigarette butt is taken to get tested for DNA. And Earl Mann's DNA is a match.
But how do you prove it? That was his DNA?
We'll get to it.
Okay.
And so this is not just a match for one random piece of evidence like the skin cells or something. Uh-huh. So Earl Mann's saliva from the cigarette butt matches the unidentified male DNA found both on Judy and Brooke in multiple tests.
Disgusting.
Yeah, he's a fucking piece of shit. So Melinda then takes this evidence that's been gathered to the court for a third time.
Okay.
And once again...
No.
It is denied. Okay. And Clarence isn't granted a new trial. And their logic is the same fucking thing you've been saying. They're like, you falsified this man's DNA.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're taking it from the man who like is accused of this crime, blah, blah, blah.
Sorry. And yeah, I guess I would have to agree in this case.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very smart way to get out of a crime if you're trying to get out of a crime. Right?
Yeah.
But we'll get into it actually further. Melinda and Clarence and everybody involved in this case has denied a fucking new trial again for the third time. And so they're saying what you said, that they were able to falsify his DNA in order to free Clarence.
Right. It wouldn't work for me personally.
Which is a crazy fucking standard. Okay. Well, we will get into it.
Okay.
So Melinda basically flips off her local law enforcement and attorneys. AGs, attorney generals, and her and the Ohio Innocence Project, along with Clarence's defense attorneys, they go to the Ohio Attorney General.
Okay.
His name is Jim Petro at this point. And they basically...
Jimmy.
Sorry, the noise that came out of your mouth when you said that was not human.
Sorry. Sometimes I'm just like, I know something is gonna make you laugh. And then
you try really hard to make it happen.
And then I do it anyway.
That was your intrusive thought. That intrusive thought one. Because what the fuck was that?
I just like, I have hope for Jimmy, okay?
Jimmy's great.
You said his name was Jim, but he is.
Yeah,
he's Jimmy.
You're a Jim, but you're giving a Jimmy. So Jim Petro is the Ohio AG. He's like
hot.
The top man. He's the top guy.
Yeah.
And Melinda and the Ohio Innocence Project, they lay everything out. They give them the DNA evidence. They give them basically the kind of botched trial at this point, I would say.
Okay.
They're like, we need to talk about this.
Yeah, so, someone needs to look at this.
Yeah, so Jim Petro looks at the case and the claim that Earl Mann's DNA has been falsified in tests. So here's the thing. So he tests the state of Ohio's DNA sample that they had taken from Earl Mann, mm-hmm. because they do that for every offender.
Okay. Oh, and it matches.
Yeah.
Holy shit. He was like, this is easy. We already
He's like, this is fucking easy because we already had this man's DNA. They test it.
So we can verify it.
Yeah. And it fucking matches.
Oh my God. How simple.
Yeah.
And listen, I do think that there is a beauty in going over someone's head. I work in corporate. We do it all the time.
Totally, yeah.
But I do think it's important that you wait until it actually matters, because she hadn't done number one, number two, number three, and then was finally like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
This has been years.
We and have DNA evidence at this point. She brought
this complete package to him, because if she had done it too early, then she probably wouldn't be in this situation. So that's on strategy.
Yeah. It's on the lady doing fucking business.
For sure.
Business ladies.
And it sounds like she had a good partnership with his, well, eventually with his attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
So this is when shit finally starts to break open.
Okay.
So Jim Petro and the Ohio AG office reviewed the files and agreed that there is an injustice here.
Good.
So
I knew Jim was going to come through here. I really just knew it.
He was root for Jim. So Jim decides to discuss the case with the Summit County Prosecutor's Office. But when that does not go anywhere, I don't know why I keep like adding words. So he holds a press conference.
Okay.
I don't know what happened.
It just happens.
Yeah, like I'm like just my brain.
But to be fair, you came over exhausted.
In that moment.
And we had dinner before we recorded, which makes you just like a little sleepier.
Dinner, you know? Drinks, yeah.
Plus so, that, whatever.
So Jim Petro basically says that they owe Clarence to move quickly in this point.
Okay, right.
In granting him his freedom. They're like, and he basically says, I want to get him out before Christmas at this point.
God bless.
And they owe it to Judy and Brooke to make sure the fucking right person, Earl Mann, is prosecuted for the crimes against them.
Yes.
Which,
of course.
Come on.
Yes.
Yeah. Because,
like, he's in prison, but what's he in prison for? It's not, you said he was going to be out in 2009?
Yeah.
No.
Because he was given, like, a really.
He murdered a woman.
Insane fucking plea deal for raping his three fucking daughters.
Good God. We'll have to talk about it offline.
Okay. So police are now believing that Brooke Sutton was probably the primary target of the June night, unfortunately.
Really?
Yes.
So he just went through. Oh, because he's a pedo.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they think that Judy had fallen asleep on the couch. And there's some accounts that say that it was a really hot night. And so maybe Judy had left the screen door closed, but left the front door open. But there's some accounts that say that Judy had hidden her house key in her mailbox and they never checked whether or not the key was there, because there wasn't a full force break-in to the
the house.
Yeah.
So they're like, they don't really know how someone could have gotten in, but they never checked every avenue of getting into the home on that night. But either way, they think that Judy had fallen asleep on the couch and she was awoken by Earl Mann breaking in.
Yeah.
And she died defending her granddaughter. She fought him off. Which is so fucking sad.
Oh, God.
So, ironically, the next day, Brooke ended up at the doorstep of the very man who tried to fucking kill her.
It's so unfair.
It's insane. And then his fucking common-in-law wife, Tanya, basically covered his ass.
Yeah.
For him. And kind of, like, created this narrative in Brooke's head of your Uncle Clarence did it. Because originally Brooke was like, he looked like my Uncle Clarence. But Tanya took that and ran with it. It was like, it was your Uncle Clarence. So that's trying to reiterate earlier. So in early December of 2005, over 6 years after his conviction, Clarence Elkins is finally released from prison. And this is a picture of him and Melinda. And he's getting out.
God.
So he's 42 here. He was 35 when he was thrown into jail.
Okay. Honestly, all things considered, miraculously fucking fast.
I know.
That's crazy.
It's because of Melinda.
Yes, it is. He should have been in there for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Unfairly. Yeah. But yeah. This is crazy.
We've, like, so many like wrongful conviction cases are take a lot longer for this. So,
exactly. That's what I'm saying. Is this could take many years.
Yeah, yeah. So in August of 2008, Earl Mann pleads guilty to the crimes he had once been blamed on.
Yeah, because it sounded like he really confessed to an officer at one point.
Yes, there was like a maybe kind of a half a trial where he pleaded not guilty at some point. And then he also said that he was going to defend himself.
Nice.
Which also,
go ahead and do that.
But that also means that he had to interview Brooke as a witness.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. Are you allowed to do that?
If you're defending yourself, you can you can interview everybody. I think it's the whole thing with Ted Bundy.
Is that why he did that?
I think it's part of it. It's gross, but like every witness that comes from the prosecution standpoint also has to be counter-interviewed from the defense.
I don't, I'm disturbed.
But like eventually that doesn't happen. He does eventually plead guilty. I think eventually he's like, oh shit, I don't think I can actually do this. When it comes to defending himself in a trial.
I'm not that intelligent.
Like, I'm not a lawyer. I'm a dumb piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
This is actually a lot more work than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's also sentenced to 55 years in prison on top of the assault of his children. And he's supposed to get released when he's 90.
Nice.
Hopefully he's dead before then.
Yeah.
I'm hoping there's some, like, jailhouse justice, you know?
What a monster.
Yeah. Piece of shit.
Do you have a closing segment?
I do. I'm going to tell you right now.
I'm waiting for it.
So after his release, the state of Ohio awarded Clarence almost $2 million as a wrongful imprisonment settlement.
Could have been more, but fine.
So Clarence also files a civil lawsuit against the city of Barberton.
Good.
And the officers involved in the investigation. Good. Arguing that the evidence had been withheld, which is including the memo about Earl Mann. His, like, statements, and he, like...
This is a reasonable fucking civil suit. He should be suing them into oblivion.
He wins that lawsuit.
Nice.
And he wins an additional $5.2 million.
Oh, my! And, okay, the thing is, you can win it, but do you get it?
So he eventually gets about $7 million from both of these.
Nice. I hope he moved to Key West or fucking...
Which is basically about $1 million per year he's in prison.
That's... You know what? I don't know. Listen, I've never been to prison. But that is a reasonable...
Okay, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, God.
It's totally... I would have no way of judging that, but like, at minimum, it should be that.
Yeah.
At minimum.
But he was also in prison as someone who assaulted a child.
Of course, yes.
So he was probably getting the worst of the worst of it.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, and he's lucky to be alive.
Yeah, he's lucky to be alive. Because when you talk about people going to prison who like hurt children, they're getting fucked up rightfully.
Yes.
All the time.
And I...
Oh, well, I'm glad. Because it doesn't... But the thing is, it doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes, yeah. Oh, they got 400 grand.
Yeah. No. I applaud the convicts who hurt people who hurt children.
Those violent men are just looking...
Yeah.
To be more violent.
Like, whatever, man. This is the person I should hurt. Listen,
let's leave them to their own devices. Yeah. They got themselves there.
Yeah. So, sadly, he and Melinda divorced soon after he's released from prison. I hope
you didn't want to
say that. I'm so sorry.
I was hoping you wouldn't say that. So,
Melinda, she talks about it specifically. She was saying that for the entire time Clarence is in prison, she's like, I am focusing on A, finding justice for my mom.
Yeah.
Finding justice for Brooke. And then also getting Clarence out. I know he didn't do this. I also want to figure out who the fuck did it. And she says that she kind of put being Clarence's wife on the back burner.
Yeah.
And on that shelf. I am focusing on this.
Yeah.
She meets somebody.
It does. It's doing listen, this. The distance. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. If she's happy, I'm happy.
And then Clarence on the other end of it is like, I just want to start over after he moves out.
Got it.
After he gets out of prison. He's I don't really...
I don't... It's so close to it.
It's so close to it. Ooh, I need to kind of pull away from it.
That's so sad, but I get that.
Yeah. But either way, Melinda basically solves this fucking case.
Wow. Yeah.
So, Clarence, after this, rebuilds his life. He remarries and becomes involved in the wrongful conviction advocacy groups. He speaks publicly about what happened to him, supporting criminal justice reform, and helping create the Clarence Elkins Scholarship at the University of Cincinnati College of Law, which supports students working with the Ohio Innocence Project, which is the same organization that helped prove his innocence. Mm-hmm. I think it's like every two students per year, they get a scholarship from this scholarship he creates. So Melinda also remarries. She remarries the guy that she met while trying to prove Clarence's innocence. And she continues her fight as well. So
I hope they're friends.
I think so. Yeah.
Friendly.
Yes. So she starts working for the Ohio Innocence Project, and then she also works for advocacy groups against death penalty in the state of Ohio.
I'm sorry. There is no one more qualified to do this.
After years of refusing to let Clarence disappear inside the system, she went to speak as a victim advocate, a wrongful conviction advocate, and an anti-death penalty advocate herself.
Wow.
So she uses her story to show how easily the system can get into the wrong and how devastating the cost can be for everyone involved. Brooke Sutton, the little girl at the center of this case, she largely has stayed out of the public eye.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, that kind of feels understandable.
Entirely.
She was a child who survived unimaginable violence. She lost her grandmother and then was pulled into a system that turned her uncertainty into a conviction. Clarence has never once blamed Brooke.
I'm gonna cry. Oh my God.
Because he saw her for what she was, another victim of this crime.
Mm-hmm.
And as for old man, the man whose DNA finally proved the truth, he remains incarcerated in Ohio and his parole is eligible in 2064 when he'll be 90.
We'll go meet him in 2064 when he gets out.
Yeah, yeah. In the end, Clarence Elkins' case is not just a story about one man being exonerated. It's a story about how hard the fight had to be for the truth to be heard and how many times the system was given a chance to fix itself and didn't. And how Clarence and Melinda each carried that story forward, not just as proof of what happened to them, but as a warning and a lesson for every case still waiting for someone to look closer.
Oh, you did it. You gave us one.
And this is Brooke later on in life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know, she does look very similar to how she did.
Mm-hmm. The older version of that little girl.
God, she's blessed with just full lips.
Mm-hmm.
Blue eyes.
Very blue eyes.
These are, you know, this is a good 90s haircut.
Totally. Sort of like that's a Rachel haircut.
That's a Rachel haircut.
It's a Rachel haircut.
Yeah.
But that is the
thank you.
That is the Clarence.
I love
Elkins' case.
We love. Listen, I would consider it. I wouldn't consider it a happy ending. I'm saying it's wrapped up.
It's a rightful ending.
Yeah,
yeah. The man who should be in prison was in prison. Everyone else has gotten out of the prison. Maybe was in prison for too fucking long.
Way too fucking long. But I hope he never has to work again in his life. And reasonably, if you get $7 million in the
early 2000s, early,
you might not have to.
Yeah.
Unless you bought a house in 2008. But that's okay. Or before 2008.
Play your cards right. Please. Invest in the fucking market. I don't know. I'll tell you.
Yeah, I don't know. Girl, please.
Yeah. But that is what we got for you this week.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I feel like, yeah, we needed something with a conclusion.
I like that.
It felt appropriate for the...
Put a bow on it.
Put a bow, put a pin, put a cherry.
Ah, nice.
Whatever is your prerogative.
Sweet. So you know how to do...
The things.
The things.
Yeah, you can rate. You can review.
You could say anything anywhere. And apparently Missy will bring it to
I will bring it to this pod.
Yeah. Good or bad. This is the rule. It is a 1-star.
Yeah.
Or it's a 5-star.
Yeah.
I don't care about those middle stars.
It's either informative or it's really, really deconstructive to my psyche.
I will help you to not care about that because okay. I'm
trying so hard not to. But thank you for listening. We will talk to you guys next week. We will have another fucking story. Until next time,
stay grimly curious. Shout out to Karen.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you so much for listening. Music by Alex Kingston and Adam McKinnon.
For podcast photos and updates, follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Grimly Podcast.
Be sure to rate and review, and we will see you next week for another episode. Bye, bitch.